to introduce. In fact, I wasn't even sure that I was saying Pass Maariv, but of course I would, because Rabbi Rakepi was my Rebbe in 1983 at BMT. The amount of people that have graduated from BMT and Gross and had the opportunity as a schus to learn under Rabbi Rakepi must be in the thousands, if not tens of thousands. He is world-renowned beyond just his intelligence and aptitude, his love for Rav Soloveitchik, and his being able to tell firsthand personal reflection on the Rav, which you'll be able to see. And I understand there's a gentleman who wants to talk about the Sfarim in the back after Rabbi Rakepet. But nonetheless, it's really my honor to introduce Rabbi Rakepet, my Rebbe, many of your Rebbes, to speak to us this evening.
We go back a long way. I have to his father and Trevor Kirschman. He helped us when we came in Aliyah 50 years ago. That was his father. I just want to mention about the books. No one should make a mistake. I'm not selling. I never sell my own books. I don't touch money on principle. But the Mossad, if you read volume of 7 of what I've written, Washington, which is probably my most important work, you'll find out that the Mossad tapped us on the shoulder. My wife and myself goes back to May 1980. And once God privileged you to do certain things and come out of it alive and intact, you have to give back. So we brought a carbon, and we continue to bring a carbon to God, and that is to help teach Torah to the Soviet Jews. So this evening I'm here also as a representative of Shvut Ami, and I've given them the rights to all my printed scholarship. It's now a 9th volume will be out shortly, and they're the ones that benefit from your large, from your largeness, not the humble speaker in front of you. Now let me run further. In life, you know, we go through life, Hayom Yom, Rishon B'Shabbat, Yom Sheni B'Shabbat, etc., etc. We go to school many days. And sometimes something happens in life that changes your eternity. In the mid-50s, I was a kid. I think I was still in high school at the time. But I was, you know, a kid who wanted to learn Torah, get ahead. And I went to hear Rav Soloveitchik give the Yahrzeit Drasha for his father. And in the second part of the shiur, what was called the Agadah, what I heard that night has transformed me for eternity. And Mori Rebbe raised a very simple question. Those of you familiar with Chumash, and I heard this person speak about the Trump before and the Pashiyot. So some of you are familiar with Chumash. I have grandchildren also that can lay it at a moment's notice. So you know there are two covenants in the Chumash, two Britot. One with Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, what we call the Brit Avot. And then there's another Brit with Moshe Rabbeinu, Sinai, Matan Torah, and Mori Rav Soloveitchik, Mori Rebbe, I'll call him Rebbe. When I spoke to the Rebbe, I would say Rebbe, so I've introduced him, but let me go and talk with him now. So Rebbe asked a question, why do we need two covenants? His native language was Yiddish. I'm a third generation American, because the Daf Sebrechim Zetzein Oislevet in Yiddish, but we succeeded finally. And Moria said, und fidar, either or. If Avraham is a Jew, why do we need the Brit with Moshe Rabbeinu? And if the Brit with Moshe Rabbeinu counts, then it means that Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov were not Jews. Beautiful question. They're actually Rishonim who asked this question. And Rebbe explained that there are two aspects to Judaism, to Torah. I'll put it into more contemporary language. We're very different than any other religion in the world. I grew up in the Bronx. There were 1 million Jews in the Bronx when I grew up. If there were 10 Jews who were shomer Shabbos out of the 1 million plus, I'm overstating the case. These are the facts, sadly, sadly. And I had Catholic neighbors, Irish, Italian. We were a third Jewish, a third Irish, a third Italian. Washington Avenue, 180th. And many of them were religious. And religion is a very personal matter. He's a Catholic, I'm a Jew. It's individual. If I can enlighten you with a little history, how many times did France fight Germany over Alsace-Lorraine? Christian turned Christian. Think of World War I. They declared a truce on Christmas, and the next day they were killing thousands. Gentile, killing Gentile. It's nothing to do. If you're religious, that's you. The fact that we're also Catholics, it's a personal matter. We have nothing in common. So Rebbe explained that Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov were Jews, but on a very simple individual level. They were Jews, like people are Christians, people are Catholics, people are Buddhists, Episcopalians. Fine. With Yetziat Mitzrayim, we take on a new configuration, a new hue, something that no other people in the world have. Our religion takes on a communal commitment. We are Jews individually, but we are Jews as part of the peoplehood of the Torah people. We're interrelated, interconnected. It's not just individuals. A very simple example. Friday night, you made Kiddush. Can you make Kiddush a second time? Soon going to read the Ten Commandments. Brachot levatala. Ichab yaitse geben shen. I can't make Kiddush a second time. There's a knock on my door. An almana, a widow, says, "Oh, Aaron, do me a favor. Can you make Kiddush for me? New barrel, am I allowed to make Kiddush for the almana Friday night? What do you say?" Absolutely. Because if she didn't hear Kiddush, Rabbi Barak, excuse me, because if she didn't hear Kiddush, it affects me as well. And this is the start, and we'll come back to the Rav in a moment. But I'll tell it to you, make it a lot more tangible. July 5th, my wife got a flock of emails from our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, thanking us for making a decision. It's now over 49 years. This is my 50th Tisha B'Av as a citizen of the State of Israel, for going in Aliyah. So I want to ask you, my wife's family is here from 1870. She has great-great-grandparents buried on Main Street in Queens. My family is here. We came later, 1900. To go in Aliyah and make a decision. What? What's wrong with West Hempstead? The five towns, Teaneck, Los Angeles. I've been to all these places. Make you feel better. Florida, Miami. Was ist schlecht? Makol kach gadua. So I'll tell you what happened to me. 1944, I go to school. And all the kids, this Yeshiva Rabbeinu Yisrael Salanter in the Bronx, Webster Avenue, 176th Street, the only day school in the Bronx, one of the few in New York at the time, organized in Harlem. And all we kids are talking about is D-Day. If you recall, my father was looking at maps. I can still hear the WOR radio, and he got a map from them, and where we're going to land, and the guesswork. Now, we had a teacher, Perak. This was Mr. Markovich. Mr. Markowitz in our English, but Mr. Markovich. And he was in his early 50s, and he looks at the class, and he says, you're talking about the war, you think you're going to be soldiers. You look at me, you think I'm an old man. He says, I fought in World War I. Now let me tell you a story. I was on the Russian front, and my best friend was with me. And we shot at the Germans. And my friend scored a direct hit. The German threw down his gun, and with his last kaychat shouted, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. The next day, my friend committed suicide in a Russian field hospital that a Jew killed a Jew. And you see, this is something unique to us. I fought in 82 in Lebanon. In 73, I was a volunteer. They didn't touch Americans. The State Department objected, but after the Yom Kippur War, they took anyone who could still walk upright. So I fought in 82. I have a war ribbon. And we came near Beirut. And in the little town, I write about it in Washington. I give you all the details. We discovered a bunch of Jews living in Lebanon, frightened, stiff, anxious to get out. Within, I would say, 36 hours, they were in Kfar Chabad. You follow? We contacted our offices. The officers already relayed the information. There was a security check. Are these really Jews? And leave it to Chabad to be available to take in a whole little community. And see, this is unique to the Jewish people. This is why before Pesach, what is the preparation for Pesach? Yetziat Mitzrayim, Korban Pesach. No, have you ever thought what's so unique about Korban Pesach? Tell me, when did you eat the Korban Pesach? We eat the afikom in Zeichel HaKorban Pesach HaNechal Al HaSova at the end of the meal. No, after you've had the matzah, the morah, the charoisis, the sandwich, the korach, I can't eat after that, but right, you don't want to embarrass your daughter, but my grandchildren can eat, they're amazing. And then you reach the afikom and well, that's when you had the Korban Pesach. No, how much did you have to have from a Korban Pesach? A kezayit. I'm overstating the case. A kezayit. You know how many Jews had to join together on one Korban Pesach? Josephus describes it. Hundreds and hundreds of Jews joined together on one lamb. Do you understand the symbolism? Am Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael, Kahal Yisrael, Adat Yisrael. We have collected responsibility. We are Jews. And this affects every aspect of life. With Churban Bayit, we remained individual Jews. But the collectiveness inevitably was minimized. At times it disappeared. The German Jew was the happiest Jew in the world. Germany is my Palestine. Berlin is my Jerusalem. And please, don't disturb my achievements with talks of Zionism, return to Zionism, peoplehood. Rav Salav Mori Rebbe, and many times, it's an unbelievable concept that he heard. You all know that the Rebbe spent what he called the seven good years in Berlin, 26 through 32. It adds up to basically seven different years. And it's an amazing, because this was Berlin. Who could dream what would be a few years later? And this is Berlin, the bull, the height of modern civilization. The Lubavitcher Rebbe was there. Reb Chaim Heller was there. Reb Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, the Sridi Yesh, was there. The greatest woman to live in the 20th century was there. Give me her name. You got it. Chama Leibovich. You can imagine the pull. And the Reb said, I was friendly, I'm quoting him, I was friendly with some of the leading German Orthodox rabbis. But they too lost this concept of Am Yisrael. And he said, one famous rabbi said to me, maybe you have something in common with Rav Chaim Isaac Rezhinsky, the Rav of Vilna. I have nothing in common with the Polish, White Russian, Lithuanian masses of Jews. Think about that. The Rav didn't reveal the name who said it to him. I have my own inkling who it was, but since I'm guessing and I'm supposed to be a scholar, we'll leave the guesswork out. But this disappeared with Churban Bayit. We lost it. We're individuals. We can't help one the other. Halavai, we should survive, and the anti-Semites shouldn't destroy us in our various communities. And it's fascinating that with the Enlightenment, the non-Jews who were intelligent went out of their way to see that we would forget about our cohesive, collective unity and mutual responsibility. What am I talking about? Know who studied me with BMT, with the course, The History of Torah in Modern Times? Do you remember 1807, Napoleon's Sanhedrin? The Jews, Napoleon was very enlightened. And he was not an anti-Semite. And he was happy to welcome the Jews out of the ghetto. But he made clear to them, are you Jews or are you Frenchmen? And remember the questions he called the Sanhedrin, and two-thirds of the Sanhedrin were Rabbanim, among them Gedolei Yisrael. And he threw 12 different questions at them. How do you feel about serving in the French army? How do you feel about the French laws of marriage and divorce? One question which was the most difficult one to answer. I'll paraphrase it. If Napoleon offers you his daughter, like the President of the United States, do you accept or do you reject? And he meant his daughter was not going to convert and become a Shomeret Shabbat Bechugel. And this was saying to the Jews, do you want emancipation? Forget about nationality. This repeats itself in modern times. 1948, the first ambassador to Russia from the State of Israel was a girl who grew up in Milwaukee. Her name?
Golda Meir.
Golda Meir, later Golda Meir. And she grew up, if you ever looked at a picture of her father and mother, mit a langer Bart, mit a tichel, and she totally threw it away. Part of that generation, the Great Rebellion. And she's the first ambassador. And first day, Rosh Hashanah, she came to the one, to use a KGB terminology, the one, quote, functioning, end quote, synagogue in Moscow. The Russians were very smart. They allowed one synagogue, one church in every community to remain open. Religion is the opium of the masses. That's Karl Marx, grandson of Gedolei Yisrael. Let's be honest, what happened to us Jews when we leave the ghetto and are blinded by the New York Times big world? But leave open, the KGB would be in the synagogue, in the church, and let the Altar Babushkas go and pray if they're that foolish. So Golda came to Akhlopova Street, the great synagogue. It's refurbished today, standing, my wife and I were just there a year ago. In my new book, I have a picture that I took in 85 of the shul. It's stately. And the people, was a little crowd, they saw her. And I was told the Chabadnikim spread the word around Moscow that Golda Meir is coming to Daven again tomorrow. You remember what happened. 50,000 Jews turned out to the synagogue on Akhapova Street. There is the most famous picture. It appeared on Israeli money, where Golda is standing at the entrance to the synagogue, where it says, Ein ze ki im beit Elokim, v'ze shah hashamayim. I have that. Mark and I took the pictures in Washington, and she's surrounded by an endless throng. Stalin went crazy. That after so many years of no yeshiva, no rabbis, no synagogues, the Jews still retain a national identity, and that's where he hatched the plan to create Lo Aleinu labor camps, Siberia, send the Jews away, the doctor's plot, and ultimately that killed him because he took ill on a Sunday. All the good doctors were in jail, Jewish, that's a fact. And all the non-Jewish doctors were dead drunk with vodka. And they say, had Jewish doctors been around, he would have lived longer. But you see, the world understood this is our uniqueness. This is the difference. We will never assimilate. And they tried to totally neutralize it, totally like a sterile operation, to remove this concept from Jewish thinking, nationhood, people. Churban Bayit, yes, we mourn. We don't have a Beit HaMikdash. We have to plead with our own government to go up to Har HaBayit, even if we do it halachically. We're not there yet. Don't let anyone tell you that we should abolish Tisha B'Av. But there certainly has been a tremendous change, a sea change. And the concept that is unique to our people, the first covenant and the second covenant, have come back again. And here I share with you a story that I write about in Washington. I've told it many times. It's an absolute true story. B'didi havi uvda. It happened to me. As I mentioned, after the Yom Kippur War, the army called up any walking male. My day came, time and again, I would get a call up on basic training, 2 months, and time and again I would get a letter, it's been canceled, you'll be contacted again. Why? I found out later, I was 38 at the time, and in order to do basic, they needed a group between 35 to 40 with the same health profile. So they had to wait till they could get 200 such strong soldiers together. But then the day came. And I don't have to tell you, basic training is basic training. And I have a theory in life, which I've attempted to instill, I did this, instill it successfully to my children. I guess my grandchildren too. I'm working on the greats now. And my theory is very simple. If you have to do something in life, do it b'lev v'nefesh, with all your heart and soul. Life is an experience. So I did basic, and I actually was the chayal chametzchayim of my unit. Later I had grandsons who achieved this. Fine. Now, what's basic all about? They keep you running, keep you busy, never tell you what's coming next. But once a week, we would hear a lecture from the Katzin Chinuch. All right, the Katzin Chinuch was no big animal. He was only a lieutenant. But he would give a lecture on something the army did in Lebanon and Syria and make you proud to be an Israeli soldier. So here we are, 200 trainees. And the Katzin comes in again, and he starts the same lecture. Wow. All right, I figured I'll sleep with my eyes open, because the officer, the sergeants are walking up and down, telling you, awake, awake. So I figured I'll sleep with my eyes open, what's the big deal? But I didn't know Russian mentality yet. The Russians are shouting at this guy, Shamanu, Shamanu. And then something unbelievable happened. This guy had one lecture. He walked off. He had nothing else to lecture. Could you imagine? It's like a Rebbe. Let me not even illustrate it. But one lecture. And then I see the sergeants are comforting. And I couldn't believe the master sergeant's walking over to me. Until then I was called Chayal. You're not addressed by your name. It's to break you into spirit. You're part of the unit. Chayal. Guy comes over to me, Kvod HaRav, Anachnu Yodim Shata Yodei Eich LaHatzot, Hatzil Lanu Et HaMatzam. Save us. I found that lady had a girlfriend, the Michal Abus, in my class. But that I didn't know. B'sha'at ma'aseh. It was Reish Chodesh Nisan. So I got up and gave this very talk. And I said, this Pesach will be very different for us. Until now, we were individual Jews. I'm an American. Here's a Canadian. Here's a South African. Here's a Russian. Here's a Moroccan. We've become one unit today. We've returned to the Korban Pesach. We are Am Yisrael. We are part of a greater commitment than individuality. Well, this changed my whole life, which I don't want to go into. I gave the talk. I didn't realize what happens. The commander of the base has to get a report what happens every day in every unit in the training base. He got this report, and he immediately called the chief rabbi, Aluf Gad Navon, Major General Gad Navon. Do you know what we had today? And I couldn't understand. The commander of the base sends for me, and he's telling me his life story. I understood later, if you're in good with Gad Navon, these people control budgets of tens of millions of dollars. If the base needs a new shul or something on latkes for Hanukkah, the military rabbinate will give it to you in a minute. Oh, this is the base. Then Gad Navon sent for me, and there the story continues, but we'll leave that for another time. So you see, we're returning in Israel. Now, how does this reflect itself? And here we have the contemporary scene, and this is at the core, at the heart of summing the burning issues that face Israel today. And I want to end off, but give me a few minutes. I want to discuss two areas that, if you hear the news out of Israel, this will open your eyes. One area is very simple. In the United States of America, you have no public religion left. When I was growing up, stores were closed on Sunday. There were blue laws. It was unheard of that stores should be open. There was a nice religious Jew, you all recognize his last name. He was Bezalel or Charlie Palm, the younger brother of Rabbi Avram Palm. The older brother was a tremendous lamdin, or as Charlie used to tell me, I had no zitzflesh to learn, so I became a businessman. He had a grocery in Brooklyn, and he gets a ticket for being open Sunday. And he fights it all the way through the New York Supreme Court. What do you mean, violating the Lord's Day? That's what the ticket reads. I'm a Shomer Shabbos 100%. My father was a Rosh Yeshiva in Chaim Berlin. My brother is the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas. And the Supreme Court said, you're absolutely right, we respect you, but the law is the law, and they fined him $1, I believe it was. But this was America. Today, you can be open 7 days a week. Religion is totally removed from the public arena. Now you take the state of Israel. Why can't we apply the same concepts like America, like England, like South Africa? We're a Western country. You want to be Shomer Shabbos? That's your privilege. I respect you. Why force me to close my store? And this is a major issue today. According to Torah, we have to be Shomer Shabbos as individuals, but as the Jewish people. I've always said that the minute we allow buses on Shabbos and stores open like Tel Aviv today, we are murderers. The only right we have to the land is that we are the B'nai Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, with the continuity of the historic, sacred Jewish peoplehood. Otherwise, we have no right to the land. What constitutes being a Jew? Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarach Mishpacha, privately and publicly. If we're going to be Kochol HaGoyim Beit Yisrael, we had no right to defend ourselves, to fight Arabs, to use weapons. It's a very big battle going on. We particularly suffer from the hundreds of thousands of Russians who are now totally integrated into the Israeli scene and who are not Jewish. If you know what's going on in Ashdod today, this is the heart of the election battle. They're not anti. We respect you. You choose to be Shomer Mitzvah, but why force us? We can't go to the beach. There are no buses. We can't go to the supermarket. And this is an issue at the heart of our existence as Jews. And I have to tell you, there are Shomer Shabbos Jews who will tell you why. Why coerce? Let them do what they want. And I tell you, these Jews never had a Rebbe who understood what Torah is all about. If your concept is only you are a Shomer Mitzvah, the land of Israel can do whatever it wants, you have one covenant, but you're missing the ultimate covenant. On a more positive note, we've had some miraculous undertakings by both the Supreme Court and by the Parliament of the State of Israel. There is no greater problem in halacha than an aguna. An aguna is a woman who doesn't know whether or not she has a husband. There are two different ways this can happen. One is the classic way. The man went out to battle. The man was on an airplane. The man was on a boat. The boat capsized. The plane crashed. He never returned from the battlefield. She doesn't know whether she can remarry. Unfortunately, in modern times, we have a man-inflicted aguna, which is very, very sad. Yeshiva graduates people who claim they're Shomer Shabbos, I'm dealing with a case now in Baltimore, it sickens me. Sickens me. People who will only eat glatt kosher. So the marriage broke up. They will not give a get. They talk like a Chinaman used to speak in my youth when you came back without a ticket for your wash. No tiki, no washi. No money, no get. And money, we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars. There's terrible problems. So you should know that there was a case before the Supreme Court a few months ago. An American tourist visited Israel. His wife, who has been desperately trying to get a get, she lives in Israel. She went to court, went to the police, and she got an ikuv yitziyah min ha'aretz. She got the police issued, this man is not allowed to leave the country. Has to give his wife a get. The man went to the secular courts. What do you mean I can't leave the country? I'm an American. What does Israel have to do with me? I'm a tourist. You can't tie my hands. And the Supreme Court ruled that you are a Jew. And we are responsible for the well-being of all Jews. And he was not allowed to leave the country. P.S. He gave a get within 48 hours. This is a tremendous achievement. It now has become the law of the land. The Knesset officially, 2-3 weeks ago, maybe you read about it here, passed the law that the state of Israel has to help any Jewish person who has difficulties such as not being able to get a get. Whatever they can do to aid the rabbinical courts, they are obligated to do. That's one level. There's another level, which the rabbinate has publicized to a certain degree recently, because everyone criticizes the rabbinate. Somehow it's like the rabbinate is a punching bag for Jews. Dershowitz, Alan Dershowitz, has a very insightful comment that I've told my students. And when I say my students today, I teach people who are world famous. They're retirees, they come to my shiurim, professors, atomic scientists, rabbanim, I happen to speak to. And he made a comment in his latest book where he talks about, basically it's an autobiography with the stress on the cases he represented. And Alan Dershowitz, all I can tell you, I'll tell you a true story that happened to me down the road from here in Cedarhurst. I was one scholar in residence, I believe it was the Young Israel of Cedarhurst, many years ago. And I quoted, he had then come out with a book, Chutzpah. And in Chutzpah, he writes about a dear student of mine, Jacques Zimmelman. So I quoted twice about Jacques, the book. And afterwards, there's a kiddush. Shlomo HaMelech B'shaito didn't eat as much food as was out on the tables of that kiddush. And these women come over to me, and they're looking at me. They're no longer alive. And she says to me, "Oh, Rabbi Rekefet, how can you quote a book by that Machalel Shabbos, Alan Dershowitz, who caused his parents so much heartache?" And I say, "Well, I was quoting," he says, "let me tell you, I'm his mother." And in this latest book, he makes a point that is golden. Why the heck did this fine young man from a fine Jewish home turn out a Machalel Shabbos Ochlin that they fucking all that does with it? And his children, it's unbelievable. And he says, "I've often thought I've become what I've become because of my mother." And he explains, my mother, you know, you don't get your brilliance from a tree. His mother was brilliant. And she came home every Shabbos from the Young Israel in Borough Park criticizing the rabbi's sermon. So he picked up, "Rabbis, you criticize And in Israel, it's unbelievable. The Rabbanim, the left, the right, the center, everyone critical, critical. So the Rabbanim is a little bit public relations. They revealed something that I happen to know for many years. They have a division of a few individuals that I wouldn't walk with in a dark alley under any circumstance. These individuals happen to have been raised in Russia. They're Balei Tshuva. One or two of them are actually Shvut Ami graduates. They gain with black clothes, tzitzis and droizin. These guys can lift up a 300-pound guy like I lift up a bottle of Coca-Cola. And they were trained in Israel. They worked for the Mossad. They go all over the world getting hold of men who have run away, who refuse to give their wives divorces. And their success rate, once they capture the man, is 100%. And I can tell you, and I'll end off with this example, because here my own flesh and blood is involved, who my students know, my eldest daughter, Teina. So, you know, she was the first female rabbinic lawyer in history, first woman ever to pass all the exams in Chayshim Mishpat. Ebenezer had a mother who babysat for all the children when she went later to Hebrew U Law School to be able to be in the Beit Mishpat and the Beit Din. So in Israel, we have advantages that you don't have. If the Beit Din decides this man should give a get and not hold up his wife and not torture his wife, they can throw him into jail. But what do you do with a person who is already in jail? And he says, the heck with it. Exits Shane, exits Vita, it doesn't matter. So my daughter is one of those testified in the Knesset. About 3 years ago, they put in a new law that until that time, to put a prisoner into solitary confinement, you had to be a police officer, certain rank. An Av Beit Din can now put a prisoner into solitary confinement. There were two cases. One gave a get within 24 hours and one within 48 hours. And I can tell you what my students taught me. The one who took 48 hours was a Yemenite. I've had Yemenite students, they say, Rebbe, we're very akshanim, very stubborn. And so you see, we've had a miracle. I just want to summarize. We've had a miracle. You know, we live lives. I just had an encounter with in Lawrence. So a very prominent family with tremendous yichus came to meet me, speak with me. I could barely speak. I had no voice. But thank God. We signed language. We got there. I'll actually give a lecture in Gruz. I'm going to give a Sharetz Tefillah weekend, and I'll answer all the questions. A Sharetz Tefillah week, when I'll stop my regular teaching and give two special lectures that were ignited by a Sharetz Tefillah. And I said to him on Sunday, when I was starting to get a voice back, I said, you know something, you, your wife, your mother, it was his mother-in-law, you ask wonderful questions. I've dealt with all this. If I be you, take off 7 years, come and study with me in Jerusalem, with me and their other teachers, 7 years. And he looked at me, I have a big lawyer, I'm this, that, you know, money. And then I said to him, my dear friend, you only live once. And part of our problem is we're so busy living that we don't realize all that is happening. Tisha B'Av is Churban HaBayit. We lost our collective unity. The Second Covenant was compromised. The State of Israel, slowly but surely, is bringing back that Second Covenant. And this is the miracle of our times. The Kibbutz Galyot, Who would ever dream Russian Jewry would wake up? Who would ever dream that American kids, Yankee fans, nothing to lose in America, can celebrate 50 years and be thanked by their descendants for being so wise, la'alot atzat b'rina. So this should be a successful Tisha B'Av, an easy fast, and we should be zeichel le'besora tovah, Yeshua v'nechama. And I turn over the floor to Rabbi David Kufnis.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Kefet. Ladies and gentlemen, Rabbi Kefet very kindly decided just to stick around for, even though it's late.